Recording in progress.
Okay, that's the fat lady from Shea Stadium, from, what was the, what, one second, well, Ebbets Field, that's what I'm looking for. I've had a hard morning. Today is November 14th, 2022, and my whole world is disappearing. Betty Neustadter died, if that name means anything to you. It has to be an old Crown Heights family married to Heshy or Harold Neustadter. And I just stopped with Harold Motzoi Shabbos. We were together in Rabbi Volkshi's, about 2 years older, but I was ahead of myself in learning. And fabulous individual, rabbi, doctor, professor, and all the children living here. And we davened together Saturday night, the minion in my building, we davened in our parking lot. And I didn't realize why. Maybe she wasn't that sick at the moment, but everything seemed, you know, fine. And then I learned that Billy Hershkowitz died. Billy Hershkowitz, mean anything, worked for YU for many years, was rabbi beyond New York City. And I found out now from the Modar Devil, he was a younger brother to Marvin Hershkowitz. I never knew that. It says brother of Marvin Hershkowitz. Well, so maybe it's a different Hershkowitz family. Right, but I didn't know either. And I took, okay, so now I understand. It's a different Hershkowitz family. I'm confusing too. I'll look, but it was a very, very hard morning, period. And I should have the energy and strength to give the shir and the lebedik adafkan vaita. Now, I have a few amendments or addendums I want to make to yesterday's, anything I said yesterday. Number one, the rabbi Thau, what's going on now is more serious than I thought. I said yesterday that my daughter knew this lady who made the complaint, and she's not entirely with it balanced psychologically, according to my daughter. And yesterday, going home from Gris, I picked up the radio and the discussion, and another lady has come through with again a complaint, and the police now have undertaken a serious investigation. So I take back again anything I said on a positive level, and I respond very simply, we have to wait till the investigation is finished. But it's so shocking and harmful, these accusations, and unfortunately where there's smoke, there's fire. And I couldn't believe what I heard on the radio yesterday. All right, nechyeh v'nireh, but it shakes you up. Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark Wiener, I want to thank you very much. The letter, Mark, is, we're trying to trace down who it is in Brooklyn, evidently with a connection to Rav Menashe Klein, who went to jail, we're talking about 25, 26 years ago, Chassidic Rebbe's son, and, you know, build a mikveh. Yesterday it turned out that a whole group of inmates from Fort Dix went to mikveh in Lakewood with my Talmud Mark. So I appreciate your letter, who you contacted, and let's see if we get a response. The word on the, we were talking about a simin betoch simin on a kosher meat, chicken, when you let a Gentile deliver it, and the metal bar is called the plumber. I thank my nephew. Actually, I know the word plumber, and I lectured on it extensively many years ago when I lectured and when I spoke about Rabbi Yaakov Yosef. But the word is a plumber. Rabbi Grinstein, Chazan in shorts, I have to handle it to my Talmud, Yeshua Grinstein, son of a Talmud, Ben Talmud, his father's a Tzvi, Harry, the Chronel of Racha. And any topic I mention, he has sources. So I'll look at it later, but I gather I'm not off in admiring the Shtiblach in Katamon, where I think they're correct. Anyone in Bermudas, they don't let daven for the Amid, but no one will interfere with your davening there. I imagine in a kibbutz that's located in a hot area, let's take Sad, I imagine they all daven in Bermudas for many months when the sun is out. But and regarding Monday and Thursday, Yoshua also sent me sources on that. My complaint is that these are people who are retired. They have all the time in the world. They can come to daven Sunday and Tuesday, etc. But Monday and Thursday, they're there. Kriyas HaTorah. Outside of that, I don't know if they daven a later minyan, but they're not at the early minyan that they daven with on Monday and Thursday. An interesting email from Dr. Bill Gvirtz. We spoke about the relationship, the sons of Rebbe, his son, Rebbe Yecheskel, and this was a family behind Halberstam and his son, Rebbe Yecheskel Hamishon, the Shinever Rebbe. And this was a family of great Rebbeim, until today, a very brilliant family. Not everyone remains Teretic, unfortunately. There was a David Halberstam, am I right, Vic? He wrote for the New York Times. And that was a direct descendant of the Divrei Chaim. I don't know how much he knew about Yiddishkeit. That's the sad part of life. But then again, you take Kissinger. Kissinger's father was the Gabbai. His mother, Wera Schenkel, as far as the Gabbai of the Yekeshim Minyan in Washington Heights, Breuer's, Antachi Shurin. And the Kissinger is Kissinger. Although in his old age, he's, what, 99 today, hitting 100, they say he became more Jewish. He davens, he goes to an Orthodox shul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, he's still married to Nancy. But interesting. So here's an interesting little comment. Bill Gvirtz descends from a family of Hasidim. And ironically, during World War II in the Krakow ghetto, my father received a bracha from the Zilina Rebbe, the youngest son of the Divrei Chaim. And the Zilina Rebbe, the Divrei Chaim, had four wives, according to his correspondent. He was born from his fourth wife. And the Divrei Chaim was in his late 70s. This is like the Netziv father, Rav Meir Berlin. I think he was also in his 70s. It was his second marriage. And Kanayin Hara, the Gedolei Yisrael, has strength. Abe, I'm not on that level. That much I'll tell you. I'm too old already to be on any level, but I certainly, even in my 70s, I couldn't have done what these great Rabbanim did. He said to my father, Ibidir and dein mishpacha velen du rishonim nicht haben kein Schlita, bei mir ist shein tunkel. And translation, he said to my father that you and your family, the Rishayim, will not be able to harm you. You will survive Hitler. But for me, it's dark already. That's the word, tunkel, tunkel. Am I explaining it dark? It's gray. And tachave. All right. Now back to Safar and all that we want to continue. Now, I could be very brief and I could say, Satmas thought they were always right and fought wars with everyone else. I want to go into some detail, and I hope everyone listening, what we have to learn from this, and this is where my hashkafa differs from many other hashkafa, but I shouldn't take credit, is where the Rav's hashkafa differs. You know, all along I've been teaching, I've been yelling, I've been shouting, I have my own viewpoints, but at the end of the day, I will never put a knife in anyone else. This is my viewpoint. All right, I learned by the Rav. I spoke in learning with Rav Meisha, Rav Eliyahu Hank, I named Gedolei, Gedolei Yisrael. I knew how they think. But there are other viewpoints. And you can't force anyone to think like you. And this is what I wrote about in Washington. It's a little paragraph that I hope people pick up. Again, I don't want to delude myself. You write, you publish. If you write a novel like Cain Mutiny, maybe you get somewhere. But when you write, volumes of Torah and reflection, all right, people glance at it. Life is like painting a picture. Everyone paints their own picture. We're all different. That's the way God made the world. That's the Gemara that I spoke about yesterday, the end of Brachot, that everyone has a different opinion. And you have to make a bracha that the Ribbono Shel Olam can understand everyone. Same thing, the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, that we all come from the same person, Adam Arishon, but everyone is a different coin. But the framework of the picture is the halacha, and the framework can't be broken, can't be bent. We don't play with it. And this is, to me, what Yiddishkeit is all about. Many other people get an education today that this is the way to go, we're correct, everyone else is wrong. And I don't have to give examples, but I just got an email, I think I mentioned it in class, from a Talmud of mine from the mid-70s. It's still, I think he studied with me when BMT was on Rehov Neely, that was the home after Abravanel, but before this home. And until today, he's Makir Tova. Why is he Makir Tova? Because he was corresponding with the Lubavitcher Rebbe at that time. And many of the other teachers here poo-pooed it, you know, the Rebbe and the Messianicism was already happening, the critique, the criticism. And I encouraged him, if that's what attracts you when you feel at home with it, adarabba the adarabba. And to me, you have to have that broadness to be honest enough to recognize. No one has a monopoly in truth. Said more than once, if one viewpoint would be totally successful, I'd be the first one to stand up and say, even if it required putting on a shtreimel, if you could show me 100% success in keeping Yiddishkeit firm and our children firm, be the first one to join. Even if I had to grow a beard, Rabbi Wiener, my dear student, and put on a shtreimel. But no one has a perfect record, and we're all struggling, and there are obviously reasons why we're out of the ghetto. It's the modern world, the progressive world. I don't have to tell you, if you just follow the news in Israel with the results of the election, you might think the country's going to go over, it's the end of the world, America's going to break relations with us, every Jew in America will curse Israel. You can't believe you saw today's Haaretz, it's beyond words what goes on. So, but this is not Satma. And all what I'm going to tell you today, I have to tell you, sadly, it made the news. I still remember suffering, watching television at that time in Israel, the 70s, the 80s. There was one channel. It's not like today that Israel television is so advanced and they come up with all these programs and then they sell them to America and everybody shalom. It's a different world. But I remember I used to watch the news. Today I haven't turned the television on in so many. I wanted to give the television away. I have a big screen. My grandson said, "Yeah, you want this television?" "Oh no, it's not modern enough." Who turns that television? Everything is on the computer. Once a Talmud taught me how to use a computer. You get the news live right on the computer. Who needs a television? But in those days, I watched the news faithfully, and a good deal of what I'm going to talk about this morning was on the Israeli news. You see, the newspapers have to keep going. The story now with Rabbi Tao, they look at it like a matana from heaven. It's a gift from heaven. They have what to write about and to talk about and to interview. And these stories, I can still remember watching the TV, and I couldn't believe what I'm seeing, what I'm hearing. Now, with one story, this is one that involves Lakewood that I heard Bishat Maisa, and I knew Reb Shnur very well, the Lakewood Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Aaron's son, Reb Shnir, I knew him very well. I was a Ben Bayit in his home when I learned in Lakewood. And let me quote you, this is a letter from Rabbi Moshe Katz, who learned in Lakewood at that time. And he describes the story that when I was in Lakewood, Rabbi Avadya Yosef Zitzal was invited to give a shiur. All right, this is Rabbi Avadya Yosef giving his shiur in Lakewood. Beis Medrash Gebor was much smaller. This goes back many years. The Satma Chevra phoned in a fire alarm to the fire company to disrupt the shiur. Rav Shneir was livid. He yelled at them that Tata was no less Yerei Shemayim than your Rebbe, and my father already invited Rav Ovadia to give a shiur. And you see, that's already, it captures life before your eyes and thinking. Satmar, Lakewood, Rav Ovadia, how do you spit in Rav Ovadia's face? And this was classic Satma. Why were they so angry at him? So I was talking with my other Shabbos. It was my grandson, I believe, was taught a few grandchildren. And we were talking about it, and they couldn't understand, you see. Because these are kids that are total Israeli. And to them, Rav Ovadia, what's wrong? He's also not a big Zionist. You follow? They view him anti-Tzioni, Shas. They don't encourage, did his kids serve in the army? I mean, you're living here, you know what I'm talking about with the army. It's the dividing line. So I explained to my grandchildren that, yeah, from your point of view, he's not a Tzioni. From the Satmar point of view, he's a big Tzioni. He's chief rabbi in a Zionist state. And imagine they disrupted. And by the way, this went on more than once. I have to tell you, on a personal level, I was blessed. What's your first name?
Aaron.
Aaron, my name? Aaron, I should be much more than I am. The people I was blessed to know. I apologize, I amounted to nothing. But I knew Rav Ovadia very well. And I have to tell you, forget about everything. A London like Ovadia, there was no one else alive with his knowledge. He beat the computer. You know, they did a test on Kisui Rosh of a woman. Who knows more sources? Rav Ovadia knew more than the computer. That's number one. Number two, he was a mensch. He cried. I can tell you, when he dealt with Agunar after Melchemet Yom Kippurim, the man was in tears. This is greatness. This is not just learning in Torah. There was no kaltkeit to him, coldness. He's a great, great individual. A volume just appeared, Natan. I don't know if you're aware, but last week at the end of the show, I said divrei bracha to you. I know you're busy and you're overwhelmed and you're all confused because you and your wife-to-be have the same first name, Baruch Hashem. And Natan is marrying Natan Ka, Natanya, Natan to Natan, with God's name in it, Baruch Hashem, should be with Mazel. I apologize once again, old age is old age, and I'm struggling, believe me. I fell last week, and I can't drive at night, and I'm struggling. I just pray to God my mind should remain good. I must finish my work on Reb Shmuel Belkin. I'm pleased with what I've written. I'm well into the second chapter, but you should understand it's very difficult to write. Do you understand why, Abe? I'm the only one alive that can write what I'm writing on what went on in 1940, when who should be the next president, what went on with the Rav. And I'm writing about my own Rebbe, and I have to weigh every word I'm writing to tell the truth, but I don't want to embarrass the Rav's memory. What went on with the students, with the Agudas HaRabbanim, with the commentator. Oh boy. And I checked, the man who wrote the editorial told me on the 50 years ago it was the biggest mistake of his life. So I called his son and I said, I want to mention your father's name in a footnote. And he said to me, Rebbe, you have no objection, show it to me before you publish. I said, absolutely. That's people I go back with many decades. Okay, coming back here. So you see, this with Rav Ovadia, a book just came out now on Rav Ovadia as a father. Are you aware of it? Are you reading it in the Elonim? There were many reviews. Do you get the freebies? You live in Israel. What do you get? You get a free newspaper every day. Aaron doesn't, a Torah tidbits, big deal. This is a real newspaper, Yisrael Ayom, free of charge, shop Friday, every day. all the Alonim, you get enough Divrei Torah and politics and insights and Ashkafa and Musa that if you take all the Alonim, it'll take you all week to read them. Okay? So, but anyway, it was reviewed in all the Alonim. And that volume is based upon Rabbi Ovadia's daughter, who's my student. That's Rivka. Remember I told you I taught one of them, and Rabbi Ovadia was so worried. Where's my daughter going? Michlala. And we became very close. I have reprints signed over to me from Rabbi Ovadia. He was so pleased. He found the Michlala, Baruch Hashem, the Rebbeim, Lamdanim, Yireim, Vishleimim. Okay. Now, let me go further. I'm now quoting from Chaim Dolfin, Rabbi Dolfin's volume, Satman Lubavitch. And this already takes us to Chabad and Chabad institution, Chabad language. And it's Chabad had on Shviyah Shel Pesach. Let's talk a little bit about Pesach. Shabbos Kol Moed Pesach, we read Shia Shirim. Right or wrong? Why do we read Shia Shirim? All right, many Dashanim have tried to figure out. Kohelet is a little bit easy to understand. Ruth is easy to understand. But Vikum Shia Shirim to Pesach, Shabbos Kol Moed. So perhaps the best understanding is that Pesach is Chag HaGeulah, physical freedom. The Jew is so happy, he left Egypt, the sphere is beginning. What is sphere? Preparing us for Matan Torah, for spiritual freedom. The Jew is so happy, he wants to reach out to everyone, Sheshem Lishlomo, and he wants everyone to understand the message, and we should rejoice before God. Now, Chabad instituted a Motzoi Pesach, they would have a Tahalucha, on Shvi Pesach, I should say, because in America there's still an eighth day too. And they can go the seventh day, the eighth day as well, they're suited to the Meshichata, I'm sure you understand, it's a big, big thing, but it's all part of that feeling, Shira, Shira, Mashallah, Shlomo, ah, Baruch Hashem, run after God, run. And what's the theme of Shia HaShirim? And again, if you're familiar with Kol Dor Dido Fleit, Mori Rebbe made it eternal. Meaning simply that if you don't grab the opportunity, you miss and have to struggle to catch up with it. Kol Dor Dido Fleit. And the Doda, the lady, is tired. She put on her nightgown. She's ready to go to sleep. And you know, women, till they get ready, after what did Kennedy say? It takes right before he was killed. He said she was late. Jacqueline was late. The motorcade had to wait for her. Dallas, Texas, 63. This was, I believe. And he said, yes, yeah, she was late, but takes them longer to get ready, but when they're ready, they look better than we do, the male species. And here this woman didn't open her door, right? Shirim. And then she wakes up the morning, what did I do? And she's running, the cold deed of fake, and where is he? What happened? And ultimately, only Bizman Mashiach will we unite the Dod and the Doda. And Chabad developed the idea, they came and used the word tahalucha, that on the end of Pesach, Chabad sets up visits to all the surrounding communities, although Charlie don't reach Rehovot, to teach Tanya. Oh boy, I hope you had no trouble getting in. Wow. Nothing went wrong on the highway or anything.
Accident.
Ah, because I saw helicopters much earlier, but that's not you. Okay.
Never been as bad as this.
Okay. Welcome. No, the trick, there's no solution. You have to come and daven here and bring a drop of food, and that's it. There's no other solution. What can we say? Okay, so the talucha means they march out to neighboring communities to teach Tanya. And one of the communities they would march to, and this is something talucha, I don't know if Chabad invented the word, we'd need here an expert in Hebrew, but they invented the word as meaning a talucha, halicha, to go and teach Tanya on the Chag. And one of the communities, if you look at the map, Crown Heights, all right, you can reach Borough Park, you can reach Williamsburg, and they insisted on going into Williamsburg. Now, we saw last week when the Satmar Rav was just beginning in America, he was friendly with everyone. He got advice from the Tzelema, he got advice from the Sixth Rebbe, from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. By the 1960s, by the 1970s, Satmar had conquered the world. And it's a very interesting conglomeration. I spoke about this last week too. They picked up, first of all, Americans, the Malachim. The Malachim had nowhere else to go. I've lectured on this extensively. No one, when you use the word Malach today, no one even knows what you're talking about, basically. But the Malachim, my wife's family, Professor Carmi Horowitz's family, Sohn, Weberman, just to give you some names, Chabad wasn't good enough for them. That was Rabbi Levine, Washington Avenue, the Bronx, 1929, broke with the Sixth Rebbe. This remnant of the Malachim had something to pick up. Satmar. They were thrown out of Torah Vadas. Mr. Mendelovich was worried they'd destroy the high school, destroy your kids from Torah Vadas were going to college at night. And Chabad already was building up a big base. In addition, you have the survivors. And, you know, much has been written and much will yet be written about the generation that survived. I told you yesterday, and I stand on it, that the young people have to be taught to have pride in what we have accomplished. In 1945, anyone who wanted a bet, the safest bet was to bet there'll be no Torah left 50 years from now. That's what Ben Gurion thought here. And in America, reforming conservative, absolutely. Who will be from? Look where we are, 80 years later, 70 years later, both in America and certainly in the state of Israel. What a rebirth, what success. Now, the immigrants that came to America, the Hungarians, the Czechoslovakians, the Romanians, a certain portion felt totally at home with Satmar. This was the old country, this is the way they were raised. America is no different. He picked up quite a following. And these people, the Satmar Rav, Rabbi Yoelish, had tremendous charisma. Until his stroke, he spoke every Shabbos. There was a tish. Tremendous charisma. You had to struggle to understand him. I didn't understand his Yiddish. And he cried. But even if you don't understand his Yiddish, Litvish Yiddish Vashleich comes good, that's a different story. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, by the way, spoke a Litvish Yiddish. It's interesting. It was a right Russian Yiddish, not a Galiciana Yiddish, etc. But even if you didn't understand the Yiddish, he cried. There was emotion. It caught on. And at a certain point, they resented the Lubavitcher Talucha. What are you coming in? You want to convert us? Underline the word convert. Now, what do we mean by convert? And this I've alluded to, and statistics, if there'll ever be any, would be very fascinating. By the Satmar Rav, when he came to America, he was in his prime yet, Satmar Rav, the old Teitelbaum, with all the tzidkut that goes with it. Chabad was low-key. The Sixth Rebbe was in a wheelchair. He had had a stroke. When he spoke, you couldn't understand him properly. His son-in-law, or two sons-in-law, particularly of the elder son-in-law, Graye, could explain what he was saying. His Rebbetzin, the Sixth Rebbetzin, she too was a powerful personality, could repeat what the husband said. And if you know Barnett Liebman, my dear friend Barry Liebman, his mother Rose was an official translator into English for the sixth Rebbetzin. It's very fascinating. But they weren't that big. 1950, the seventh Rebbe takes over, and takes over. It's a handful of Hasidim, maybe a few thousand at most. But by the 70s, Chabad is Chabad, and he's very attractive. And a lot of the youngsters in Satmar are very attracted to Chabad. And the reason is, you have to be a sociologist to understand it, these youngsters already were born in America, or at least raised in America, even though they came to America young. They don't remember Europe and what it was with the Hasidim and Satmar and Munkach and all that went with it and sons. This was a world they no longer were part of. And, you know, you keep on hearing a message. This is no good. That is no good. Everyone is no good. Just we're good. And then you turn to Chabad. And what do you hear in Chabad? Imagine you say to the seventh Rebbe, their yid is nishkut, as a chiloni, a secular yid, a secular chiloni, got it? The Rebbe would respond, what's the Retmendor? As an enikul from Avraham Avinu, Yitzchak Avinu, Yaakov, the Rebbe had a totally different approach. You couldn't criticize a Jew in his presence. And I have to admit, I couldn't be like the Rebbe. Dealt with billionaires who came to see him, and they davened in a Reform temple. The Rebbe said, I hope next year you'll be in a conservative temple. And the year afterwards, you'll be in a proper shul. Do you follow me, Abe? It's a whole different approach. And some of these Satmar kids picked it up. And in 77, by now, Satmar felt, we're losing. They're robbing some children from us. They issued a warning to Chabad, you're not to dare come in on Shvi Shel Pesach to teach Tanya. Because when the Tahalucha would reach Williamsburg, you know, kids see them coming, teaching, talking, I don't know, maybe there was a Lachayim. They gave a warning. So I want to read to you what Chaim Dalfin writes. And I have to tell you again, this volume on Chabad and Satmar, my only criticism is he tries to tone down as if Satmar wasn't that bad. They didn't fight so much. You know, they tries to make peace between them, but even he has to admit, at times it grew out of hand. He writes about the Lubavitchers. They paid no heed to the warning of the Satmar leadership to skip Williamsburg that year. Lubavitch, who had lived through the Tsar, Lenin, Stalin, and the Nazis, was not going to be deterred by threats from some in the Satmar community. And they went into Williamsburg. I want to tell you, they were practically lynched. That's how bad the reaction was. Rabbi Yoel Cohn, the famous Chozer, we've spoken about him. Rabbi Yoel, he had an unbelievable mind, I can tell you. He could repeat word by word with the smile or the tears or the grimace exactly what the seventh Rebbe said. And they would write it down. He would repeat it after Shabbos, after Yontif, and they would write it down. That's how you get the Sichot, the endless talks of the Rebbe. Nothing was lost. And Rabbi Yoel Cohn, who taught Chassidus, the Satmar Chassidim, was almost lynched. A thick metal garbage can was thrown at Reuven Pollack, listen to this, a former linebacker at the University of Miami. It bounced right off him, having almost no effect. When the protesters saw this, they got scared and quickly ran away. Rabbi Leibel Groner, that's my dear Reb Leibel, we were very close to Chesed. died in the first wave of Corona. Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. He had an old label, especially his Alzhi and his brother, but they were related to the Rebbe. They were cousins to the Rebbe. And they were Lamdanim Mufhakim. They were products of Torah Vadas, and when the sixth Rebbe came, it united the Chabad tradition and the family. There was an older brother, Yaakov. He already davened with the Gato and davened the Sachari, but he was a big Mizrachiite. He wasn't... Chabad didn't pick him up like it picked up his two younger brothers. He already was settled in Ashkafa. He was the head of the Sheikhtim in Newark. It was... Does anyone remember that? Vic, did you have contact with the Groner family? You know what I'm he was Reish HaSheikh, he was the head of the Sheikhtim. Here in Israel, he headed up the Mizrahi, all the health divisions that dealt with Mizrahi people. He was the one who represented the Mizrahi and made it available. A Yirat Tzadik. So Label became the Rebbe's right hand. David, that was sent by the sixth Rebbe to Australia, Reb David, Itzhak David Groner, Yitzchak David Groner, and he was a Lamdan Mufat, you should know, a Posek. And later, the seventh Rebbe said, look, you know Australia, they need someone there, ask your wife if she'd be willing to go to Australia. And as they say, the rest is history. And he built what? Yiddishkeit in Australia all goes back to Chabad. You have to give credit. They built an unbelievable framework there. It merges with Mizrahi. It's very fascinating that with all of Chabad, it goes hand in hand with Mizrahi. There's no chasm between them in Australia. And Reb Label, the descriptions, and this I saw in the Israeli news, was escorted by police into a taxi. They had to move him beyond the crowd around him, and he was escorted by the police until he got back to Crown Heights. So you see, this already is, we never had this in America before. And this, like Lakewood, Rabbi Avadya Yosef, calling the fire department, who could dream that you could act this way? I can take it further, which I alluded to and spoke about. This is Reb Moshe. What they did to Reb Moshe with the psak on AI, the election on this, I believe it's all published in Rakafar Aaron Chelik Gimel. I lectured on this extensively. Look, AID, artificial insemination donor. David, I saw you on screen before. Now I see you in person. Kol HaKavod. It's a serious problem because it's Mamzeret is the least of the problem. Because Mamzeret is a sexual act. Here there's no sexual act. It's the least of the problem. But how do you allow fertilization from the semen of a non-Jew? You're taking into your body, you know, and this takes us back. Anyone who went to college and took classes in educational psychology and sociology, time and again, what's more important, nurture or nature? You follow? And we have to be honest. You take a kid whose father is Metagoyish Kup. We Jews, the world hates us, and anyone intelligent can understand why we're so smart. Could you imagine how many Jews are learning Daf Yomi today? Look what it does for your mind. It sharpens your mind. I remember my Rebbe saying to us in fifth grade, we started Gemara, American kids, our Rebbe wasn't even a Shemesh Shabbos, but he knew Gemara from his youth. I remember him well and I'm in debt to him. He came to my graduation from Yeshiva College. Well, when I got my doctorate, I still remember one of my graduations, Mr. Perach showed up and he was all overjoyed that he inspired a little kid from the Bronx. And he said, what is Gemara about? It's a pencil sharpener. It sharpens your mind. So now you take the semen, the chromosomes, the genes from a guy. So what kind of kid is going to turn out? And on the other hand, he's going to be raised in a beautiful environment. It's not an easy question. But Reb Moshe, and there's a lot of emotion involved. I don't have to tell you, all of Rosh Hashanah, what is the theme? Akara, Ikrut, women who can't conceive. And we see that with Sari Menu and Rivka and Rachel afterwards. Wow, it's a theme that runs a Chana. Chana, I was just at the upshoving of my great-grandson last week. I think it was last Tuesday. It was up the week ago tomorrow. And where was it held? At Kevesh Shmuel Hanavi. And I was very impressed. The place is beautifully fixed up and the two big chairs for the kid to sit on. And I saw a kid so happy. And I was the first one to cut a little hair and they're collecting their kanayin hara. I don't know. Aaron, when I was growing up, I never heard the word up in Plain, and Charlie never heard it either in Washington Heights. And today, Baruch Hashem. So then everyone asked me, why do you come to Shmuel HaNavi's Keva? Because that represents children, Chana, praying, a child, how precious, the future. Lena HaZerkit Palalbi. Wow. So this is the unbelievable rebirth that we have, but without machloket, without fight. But this is Satmar. And imagine, almost lynched, police escort, put him into a car, willing to storm Yontif. It's beyond comprehension. This is only part of it. What made everything worse was the Six-Day War, Al Agula v'Al HaTemura, the stroke that the Rebbe has right afterwards, and Israel, at that moment in time, it was like I would say, Moshe Dayan. I don't have to go any further. I told you when I started teaching in Michala, the greatest member of the faculty, Rav Shlomo Minahar, from the Bergman family, Lamdin Mufak, represented all of the old community, the Yeshiv HaYashan, and the rebirth and Merkaz HaRav and Zionism. And he said, if Dayan would be from, he could be Mashiach Tzidkenu. And I remember I was shocked when he said it. All right, later I was proven right and he was wrong, but we'll leave that for another time. Then Entebbe. Entebbe, the machloket was unbelievable. And he writes about it here, Chaim Dolphin. And it's very simple. The Rebbe said that this is a miracle. We have to give credit to the Israeli army. By the way, I had personally two students from the early years of VMT who were on the raid into Entebbe. One was one of the special forces unit, and the other one was a medic. Two of my own students. And, you know, it was miraculous. I've often said I've lived here 53 years. There were very few days that you were happy. Every day the news, the war of attrition, the Yom Kippur war, the survival, the government, the anti-Torah, and I mean what we went through with Chometz on Pesach and the hospitals with Horowitz and the buses and the train on Shabbos with Michaeli, it's not simple matters. But once in a while you hit a day that is absolutely perfect. And July 4th, 1976, was Lav Me'alma Hadein. I still remember everyone rushing to the airport to greet the planes coming in from Entebbe with the hostages freed. And I remember Chabad, the tefillin stands, the kotel. It was a unique day. So the Rebbe said, it's a miracle. And Sapa went crazy, a miracle. Shoyim, an army, Fritzl. And how can you say it was a miracle? And the Lubavitcher Rebbe responded to simple halacha. Tell me, when you have a miracle and you come back to that place again, don't you have to make a bracha to our Ribbono Shel Olam she'asali neis b'makom hazeh? Said anyone who isn't in Tebi and they go back, won't they have to make a bracha? The Lubavitcher Rebbe was very strong. The Satma, the original Satma Rav, was no longer alive, but his nephew succeeded him, Reb Moshe Teitelbaum, and at one of his Fabrengens, right after he succeeded Reb Yoel, Reb Yoel died in 1979, so there was a whole Fabrengen in Borough Park, and reporters came, and a journalist right at the event was physically attacked because he was suspected of Lubavitch emotion or attachment or sentiment. And you can multiply this. Other journalists, other events, people attacked Lubavitch, fist fights, scare tactics, beyond words. Now, by the end of the 50s, there was an article in Commentary magazine. I'm going to quote from it. It was published on November 1, 1959. So see, this is Reb Yoel Ish is still very powerful. It's in the height of Satma when he's succeeding, and people are now trying to find out who is Satma, what is Satma. And this individual, who I don't believe was a chassid, I don't even know if he was a Shema Shabbos, but he wrote an article on the rebirth of Hasidus in America. And he talks about Lubavitch on Eastern Parkway, the Kloisenberger, who was a cousin to the Satma in Williamsburg, later in Jersey City, and of course the Satma Rav. And by now, the late 50s, when you had the tremendous battles in Israel over Gius Banot, this was a tremendous battle. I write about it in Rabbinic Authority. You'll see when it's published. You'll see my sources, some interesting material. But Satma started demonstrations. They could bring out 5,000 people before the Israeli consulate in Park Avenue in New York, 3,500 people Manhattan Center, 2,000 or 10,000 to Union Square. The first is the Jewish Telegraphic Agency's fixture. The second is the Yid, the Satmar's publication. And the author of this article raises the issue, how is Satma so possible, so powerful? How can they achieve this? How is it possible? And he makes a very insightful comment that tortures me until today, because he hit the nail on the head. And this takes me back to my whole debate with Rabbi Shalom Gold. And there's a lot of truth to Rabbi Shalom Gold's stance. I had a debate with him years ago, but I've spoken about it, it's not for now. You see, what made Satma so powerful is at these rallies where they attacked Israel in public, other people spoke as well. And they got Reb Aaron Kotler to come on an issue. They got Rabbi Schwab, Shimon Schwab, Breuer, come and speak. And you see, this goes on until today. You just had demonstrations, Satmar against Israel, a few years ago. I forget what the issue was. Maybe one of you can remind me, but something here in Israel, oh, it, I think it's draft, the draft issue. Of course, now, sooner or later, every yeshiva boy is going to have to serve in the army, or we won't have a state left, plain and simple. As the Haredim and Chardalim take over the country, Baruch Hashem, you got to keep the army going, and we need a more powerful army than ever. So that was the issue. Who spoke at that event? I couldn't believe my ears. Rav Maltiel Cutler, Rosh Yeshiva Lakewood, the Baron's grandson. You're speaking against Israel. Who are you? I don't have to tell you. Here in Israel, it's not one of the heroes. It's a whole play. He was married to Rav Elder's granddaughter. And when Rav Schneid, when his father died, they wanted him to come back to America. And Rav Elder's granddaughter, yeah. It's Rav Feinstein. He's married to Yehimelech Feinstein's daughter. And she refused. She quoted the Mishnah, the Sugyan Ketuvot, that a kol olin, that if the wife wants to live in Israel, you cannot force her to leave Israel. It's a tremendous machleket between the Brisker and the Cutler family, Bishat Maisa. I remember when Rav Shach died, and my friend Ephraim, Rav Shach's only son, was sitting short for his father. So he told me, I went to Menachem Aval, and afterwards, we were very close. And he told me for the first time, the Brisker came to be Menachem Aval. We haven't spoken with them in years, because the Brisker supported Rav, supported the daughter, you don't leave Israel. A whole volume came out with people wrote in it about the how she's absolutely right. And the Cutler family, which of course includes Rav Shach, who married the Avisa Zalman Meltzer's niece, and it's all cousins to the whole Shach family, and they said, more important, Habatzat Torah. But you see, what gave Satma Stoltzkeit, you have an issue, draft of yeshiva boys. You have to be Satma to be anti-Israel. Chas v'chalila, they'll wipe out Torah. Everyone will be in the army. No one will learn Torah. It'll be the end of Torah, the end of any religion. And it made Satma powerful, and it makes Satma powerful until today. I'm told that at this rally, Rabbi Moshe Meiselman also attended. I couldn't believe my ears. It's. I don't have to tell you the Akmas Nefesh. I have to calm myself down because I love Torah. That's not to me. Then they asked the Satma, and he describes it very beautifully. They asked the Satma, why do you demonstrate against Israel? Why do you have to catch and embarrass Israel in the eyes of the non-Jewish world? And their answer was, this is the only way we can influence Israel. That Jews fight with the government, that's meaningless to them. But when we can get America and get the non-Jews and get political, international pressure on them, then we can have an influence. And these demonstrations went on. And that's the famous story I told you. I'll repeat it again. And I wrote it up and I gave you the source. And I know this, Bishat Maisa, that when the Zgiyas Banot, when everything went on, so Rabbi Aaron Cutler, Rabbi Mendel Zaks, wanted to get the Rav to come out against the state of Israel. They're demonstrating, they're yelling, they're shouting, they're putting the Edsman New York Times. So the Rav is at this meeting with them in the Upper West Side, and the Rav walks out with nothing to do with it. And by the way, some of this is published in Natty Helfgott's volume of the Rav's letters. And it wasn't that the Rav was in favor of drafting women. The Rav was also opposed. But he said, we don't demonstrate in front of the guy, in front of... And I heard from my own ears where the Rav said, their hands are still covered with Jewish blood. Well, I mean, World War II, just think what America could have saved, what England could have saved, what Canada could have saved. One is too many, etc. And wow. Now, then, so this is a golden point that this author makes, that it wasn't just Satmar. Satmar already became a rallying point. When you want to yell at Israel, shout at Israel, scream at Israel. Now, I'm telling you this in parentheses. People from the right world have complimented me. They say, you criticize Israel the way we are. I say, yeah, but there's one difference. I know the problems in Israel. I know exactly what's wrong. It's because of you. Israel is a democracy. Come live here and paint the picture right. And I have to tell you, the greatest tragedy is 150, 170 years ago, and all our families, my family too, my wife's family, that Abayim told you not to go in Aliyah. Why did we wind up? Statistics for the 6 million. Those that can, yeah, and that's, I told you, I spoke, this goes back 50 plus years. I was a newcomer, Olech Hadash, that's the term, Olech Hadash, right? My wife says, you remain an Olech Hadash all your life. Charlie, is it true or not? There's some, my wife, she's not wrong, that much I can tell you. As much as, I'm much more integrated because I served, I did basic training, served in the army, worked for the Mossad. I know what's going on here. This weekend I did some secret work at Baruch Hashem. I'm under three different security clauses. One no longer, one was abolished, but the other two still exist. So, had we come en masse, 1880s, 1890s, wow, what a different state it would have been. And I can tell you a story again. Abe, I wish you would make a movie. What I'm going to tell you now, this is a movie that would play all over the world. My nephew serves in the army. He's one of a nice-sized family. And it's my wife's brother's son. And he's going home after coming back on Sunday, dead tired, was off the weekend, all the way up north, and he falls asleep on the train, doesn't get off at the right stop. They reach the last stop, and a lady says to him, Chayal, takum, wake up, titorea. And she says, oh, you had to get off, there's no train until tomorrow. She says, come to my house, to sleep over, call your commander, and explain to him what happened. Goes to the house, wonderful people, and sees they're not religious. She later told us he only drank water, wouldn't eat anything. All right, gets back to his base. Gets home for Shabbat a week later, and his mother, my sister-in-law, says, who took you in? The name, checks it out, gets the phone number, calls her to thank you, to thank her. And these two ladies start talking, and where did you grow up? My sister-in-law grew up in Yerushalayim. She's from a Greek family, a Jewish-Greek family, born here. Also survivors. Hitler came to Greece as well. Oh wait, was she born here? Maybe she was born in Greece, but came here as a little girl. And the other lady grew up in Kibbutz Mizrah. Oh, my sister-in-law says, wait a minute, I think we have a relative from Kibbutz Mizrah. What's your husband's name? Yaakov Tzvi. Yaakov Tzvi. My sister says, my husband. What's your father's name? Yaakov Tzvi. My husband is Yaakov Tzvi. Anyway, they get to talking. were cousins. Mamish first cousins. My father-in-law was living here already. My mother-in-law died, Zichrona Tzadeket Levracha, just at Kaddishfer yesterday. It was her yard sign. A woman born in America in 1906 or so, from Charlie. And I asked her one time, how did you remain from? I mean, you know, the public, no central, no day school. All right, her father was with a board, and chauffeur, etc. She told me in high school she read when Drachman came out with the 19 letters in the English, Bernard Rahe. She said, that changed my life. That gave me the strength. So we had a reunion. My father-in-law was then, we brought him into our house, and then he was with us for about half a year more. Then he went into a Bell senior citizen in Machne Yehuda, it used to be. It doesn't exist anymore. And it was perfect for him because he was born a Belza, and his final years were in a Bell's senior citizens. So he had a reunion. And here is his first cousin, Mamish's first cousin, Jakob Tzvi, and this is who my brother-in-law is named for. The family name Jakob Tzvi runs in the family. They were named for the same person, actually. And they told us the story. He was a kid, dying to go in Aliyah. The family went to the Rebbe, and this is 1937, 38. Absolutely not. I can sign a guy, you know, go to Israel and be a guy. And they absolutely forbade him to go. He snuck away to a boat that was leaving clandestinely with people going in Aliyah. And his parents went to the police, and the police took him off the boat because he was under 18. He can't run away from you. He was 17 at the time. And he survived with miracles, made it to Israel, and the entire family was wiped out. No one else left. And you see, imagine had they come 1880s, 1890s. This is, what are you complaining? And it's fascinating because that branch that he finally got here and went to a Treif Kibbutz, Mizraz, where they make Oto Dabar, Chazer, Donald, Basalavan, they call it. And here, the other part of the family who came via America, Tzadikim, Yireim, Vishleimim. It's a challenge, plain and simple. But better to be in Israel, we quoted the Yakut Shimoni a week ago, and not be religious, because ultimately if you live in Israel, it has an impact, as we see with the Balei Tshuva. But a fascinating story. And you can critique, Avada, you can critique. But Chametz in the hospitals, it's your fault. You're not here. And I have to tell you, Baruch Hashem, talking that way, I've brought a few people in Aliyah. A kid in the Kotel came to me, in the Kolel came to me a week ago. He met if he mentioned the name of the family. I told him, yeah, that's a Chabad family living down south. Rebbe, you brought them in Aliyah. I said, I know, Baruch Hashem. And they've succeeded here. Now, Satma, they can have these demonstrations, they could get publicity, they could pick up people who were bedfellows, not exactly the same hashkafa, but Rabbi Schwab willing to speak, Rabbi Meiselman, I don't think he spoke, but I may be wrong, but at 10, Rav Malki El Kotler, and you got to understand what we're talking about. Rav Baran, as I said yesterday, you had heard Eidut Nemana, he didn't trust Satma Shrita, you heard the source, I quoted it. But it's more than that, what Rav Baran suffered from Satma. They once were a powerful force, don't vote in the election. Now, you don't hear about it. The Satma Ruv came to Israel, distributed tens of millions of dollars in today's money standard, took away the Tudat Seichut for the election, gave it back to you a day later. You know what, not voting in the election, what that cost Agudat Yisrael? Satmar was once powerful in Israel. 2 seats. 2.5 seats. How much more money could have gone to Chinuch Atzmai? How many more children would have been Shomrei Shabbat? And here's Malki El Kotla speaking, you have no idea. But that's Satmar, that's their power. Now, more than that, this concept that I spoke about with Reb Moshe and Artificial Insemination, a case in point, this is page 304, was the Satmar's people's treatment of the rabbi who for 27 years had occupied the pulpit of B'nai Israel Community Center Synagogue on Williamsburg's 4th Avenue. He served as president of the local Mizrahi chapter, occasionally supported Israeli fundraising efforts, chose to be clean-shaven, and ruled that it was permissible to drink pasteurized milk, even though no kashrut inspector had approved it. Morning after morning, the rabbi found his front steps covered with noisome garbage. His windows were painted with tar, to which was affixed anti-Israeli leaflets. He was rudely accosted on the street by youngsters in skullcaps and payas. His telephone rang all through the night. And when it was answered, anonymous voices cursed him. His wife was spat on in the street. One day she received a telephone call telling her that her husband had been run over by a truck. The rabbi finally resigned his lifetime contract with his congregation and moved away, although he had no other appointment. And you can multiply these stories indefinitely. I can say, I'll mention a name that's dear to me, Rabbi Aaron Bishurin. Remember that they taught it at Stern College for many years, wrote for the Yiddish newspapers, Talmid Yed of Rabbi Reverend of Moshe Soloveitchik.
David's father.
Whose father?
David Shuran.
Yeah, David Shuran. I'm just going to say, his own son is my own Talmud. His daughter-in-law, Esther, my own Talmidah. And so the Rabbi Shuran wrote articles against Satmar when they went wild. And he, around the clock, telephone calls, day and night. Reb Moshe went through this. Finally, he had a change to an unlisted number. And this was Satmar. So that Rabbi Max Kirschblum, I knew him very well. His son was my classmate. He was president of Mizrahi. Do you recognize the name? Anyone here from Queens? That was his brother, who was rabbi at the Conservative Temple on Main Street. But his brother was a closet Orthodox Jew. He was in the Conservative movement, the rabbi. He was a pain in their neck. You know what I'm talking about? Whenever the Conservative movement would come out with an innovative ruling changing halacha, he would issue an opinion that is absolutely incorrect. And he had a prominent, you know, one time that was a prominent congregation. It's not like today that you find few conservative temple goers left in Queens. And this is his brother, Rabbi Max Kirschblum. So after he spoke at a Mizrahi convention, an anonymous call came to the national office of the Mizrahi claiming that Rabbi Kirschblum had just been killed in a traffic accident. All right. Again, now another name, Chaim Liebman. Any of you, Lieberman, did anyone recognize the name? Chaim Liebman was a Chabadnik who, by the way, was caught in the middle of the big fight. He was supported of Shmayo Guraya, actually. But he was a Chabadnik, and he wrote, he was from the 6th Rebbe, one of the top Hasidim. And he also came out against Chabad, against Satmar, pardon me, against Satmar, the Jewish daily forward. And finally, an author of a letter to the forward praising Lieberman. The Satmar were furious. You're praising that guy who fights Satmar? What did they do to the guy who wrote the letter? He received scores of magazines to which he never subscribed, followed by bills for them. Salesmen of all type came to his door in response to his so-called requests. Organizations sent to pick up clothes and furniture that he supposedly had offered. A Catholic priest thanked him for his letter, expressing, quote, interest, end quote, in the church. And you see, this is something. There was a new level, a new level. And here I come to, let's put it this way, this is really in my backyard. My second book, or maybe my most famous work, because it's, I had many fans for the Silver Era. The Novominska Rebbe in public praised my work time and time. Baruch Hashem. Let me not say anything. I was privileged that the Novominska Rebbe, but to me that's lightweight. Mori Rebbe, the Rav, one day you'll get me drunk and I'll tell you what he said about my work on the Silver Era. All right. The Satmar's moving wrath was also turned on Rabbi Eliezer Silver of Cincinnati, 79-year-old president of the Union of Orthodox Congregations, when he criticized the Satmar ad in the New York Times condemning Israel. He said it's offensive to religious law, to chilat lashon hara, and about the totality of the Jewish people. He was threatened with physical violence if he would ever set foot in Williamsburg. An Israeli bond rally at the huge Brisker Shul on Williamsburg's Clymer Street had to be called off when Satmar partisans jammed the synagogue to threaten rabbis and speakers. Police had a quell a riot in the old Fifth Street synagogue when Satmar zealots tried to drag Binyamin Mintz, deputy speaker of the Knesset, off the dais. Now, Binyamin Mintz, I have to tell you, that's a story unto itself. And Abe, if you ever go to the Sam Spiegel School and learn how to make movies, or there's a religious school that teaches Ma'aleh, I think it's called, how to do movies. This is an unbelievable story, Binyamin Mintz. Mean anything to anyone here, or the world has moved on, a new generation? Binyamin Mintz was a Polish Gerich HaChassid, and he was caught up with the Zionist dream. But to be a Mizrahiite, you can't do that. You're a Gerich HaChassid. He was one of the founders and advocates and polemists and theologians of Poli Agudat Yisrael. Poli Agudat Yisrael was quite strong the 30s into the 40s into the 50s. And this was Binyamin Mintz. The tragedy was that he was a Gerich HaChassid. He wrote well, publicist, newspaper, ideology, anything he touched got off the ground. He was an activist. But at a certain point, Ben-Gurion wanted to form a government, and Agudah refused to go with Ben-Gurion. And you can check this all out on Wikipedia. If you don't know, it's fascinating and sad. Binyamin Mintz, Poli Agudah, went with the government. He became Shah Hadoah, if I recall correctly. And the Gerer Rebbe, let me put it figuratively, put him in Cheirim. And he died shortly after. The heartache of a chassid, you know, if the Gerer Rebbe, I don't know, if you're a Litvak and your Rebbe smacks your face, I don't know if you would take it that much to heart. All right, I have the right to differ. You know, I always tell the story that I never asked the Rav's permission to go on Aliyah. And everyone, anyone from my generation will say the same story. Because they knew if they would ask the Rav's permission, he would say, stay in America. The Rav once complimented me that who can teach a Taisus like you and excite teenagers when you're teaching? It means you know how to deal with America. But we didn't ask the Rav. It's a different attitude. Label Greens, I'm quoting names, these were classic names, why you must machem, conquered the world. He was in a suburb of Toronto. And he became a shtickler chassid like Norman Bernhardt as a generation, as a generation you know nothing about. It's slightly before my time in yeshiva. I mean, my time in yeshiva, but slightly older. And the Label Green goes to the Lubavitcher Rebbe and he's all excited, he wants a brach, he's going to Aliyah. The Rebbe smacked him down and you built a community, Hamilton, you built it into a Makom Torah, don't you dare leave, you follow? So this is the difference. But Binyamin Mintz, he lost out, never. His heart gave out. Very interestingly, his son, who died the last year or two, lived right around the corner from me. If you know where I live on Berlin, he lived on Palmach, right off Palmach. And he was an interesting individual. You could see already that he grew up and he was a little... let's put it this way, his father's struggles made sure that he would not walk a straight party line. You follow? He already was... Now, Poli Aguda, let me just end this off and then I want to introduce we have a fascinating volume coming up. Poli Aguda disappeared. The reason it disappeared is because as time moved on in Israel, in other words, Dor Dor V'Darshav, this is a reality. When you grow older, you understand it better. Kohelet, the ability to understand new periods. Well, as I told you, I received the Torah. None of my rebbeim had beards. I gave you the names from 7th grade through smicha. Not one rebbe didn't shave. From Rabbi Gershon Yankelevich, my 7th grade rebbe, to the Rav, my rebbe, my final 4 years as a student in yeshiva. Today, find a rebbe without a beard? I don't know how many and why you don't want the majority have beards. It's a different world. Poli Aguda, a generation or two later, either you went to Aguda or you went to Mizrahi. There was no bridge between them. Charlie, in the year 2023, we have a bridge again. The Chadalim are what Charedim Datiim Lumim are basically what Poli Aguda was. It's amazing. And you see that between Smotrich and Shas and Gafni, there's a Safa Meshutefet. It's Baruch Hashem. I hope they'll honor us within a week or two. Realize you can't have everything. Work out the ministries. Work out the ministries. Give your supporters nachat.
How did the Rebbe feel about all this? Did he know what was going on?
Which Rebbe are you talking about?
Did he know what his boys were doing?
We spoke about that on many months ago. I quoted from the volume that came out on Heshuv Shechta. So when Heshuv Shechta was active in RCA and religious Zionist, and Heshuv Shechta, you know, was a frum Jew. No one could put him down, and his native language was Yiddish, and he came from a Hasidic background. It's like David Hollander, you understand, that's Moshe Sherer's brother-in-law. These guys, so he got in touch with Satma, and he complained that your demonstrations are causing Chilul Hashem, and you got to see the exact quote in the book, it came out within the last year or two. I have a copy, but it's in my house, it's not here. Because that top, my wife grew up in Heshel Shachter Shul, so we share the book together. Her brother is mentioned in it. So, as a matter of fact, my brother is sat with my wife right now. Her brother is with her, my wife has his sister. So the Satmarav said, no, we'll minimize, we won't do this, we won't do that, and give out circular. And in the meantime, a day later, they're driving around giving out circulars. So Heschel Shachter got back to the Satma and, you know, was furious. They said, no, he didn't get the message yet to the driver. There's a lot of double talk. Again, it comes back to my conversation I have many Talmidim in Satma. And there are many closet Zionists there, etc. We'll talk about this in due course. But I asked, I'm now walking in Borough Park years ago with a Satma Chassid, and I quoted the Rambam, Parash Minat Tzibur. He says to me, quote, and he enlightened me. He said, Rebbe, you're right. There's only one problem. The Satma Rav thinks he's the Tzibur, you're not. Okay. You can't argue past that. Okay. Now, I want to go a step further. There was a very interesting individual, you can Google him, Professor Jerome Mintz. If we were talking about Binyamin Mintz, this is another Mintz. Professor Jerome Mintz, I don't even believe he was religious at all. I never met him, I don't know his background. He was a professor, he was a sociologist. And if I recall correctly, he was in the Midwest in the United States, a professor at the university. He published a number of volumes. Two of the volumes are on the Hasidic world. And he had tremendous insight in what he published. Let me put it this way, whether emotionally he understood it entirely, I'm not certain. But as a sociologist, many times he hit the nail on the head. The first volume I've quoted many times in many different contexts, it's Legends of Hasidim, or I don't know if I have the exact title, but it was the last book I bought before I went in Aliyah in 69. I remember reading it on the boat. And it dealt with stories of Hasidim in America. And I quoted from it. It's a fascinating volume. Many years later, he published another volume. I think this other volume was in 1992, so it had to be a good 25 years later, 30 years later, the research. Published another volume, Hasidic People. And at that point already, I couldn't afford to buy new volumes, but I Xeroxed the entire volume. Hasidic People, a place in the new world. And the stories he tells, the case stories, bring everything we've spoken about today. Bring it, mamish, tangible, to life. And I'm quoting from the volume beginning on page 154. The title chapter is titled Satmar and Lubavitch in Conflict. And he's dealing with the problem we've mentioned. Satmar feels threatened. Lubavitch is the taluchot. And you see, Satmar claimed, you're robbing our children. Lubavitch answered, no, we're meeting their needs. They are questioning us. They want to learn Tanya. Well, if you, David, I don't know why they opened the door, but you're leaving. Okay. So close the door behind you. He has to go to work. What can we do? He comes in from Mala Dumim. It's not simple. And I feel bad because I have a class in front of me. I haven't even looked. The screen is filled with people. But people are listening. You have on the screen New York and Chicago, Florida. You follow Aaron? They're staying up all night.
Cleveland.
No, it's not from Cleveland right now, but occasionally they can be. And no one I don't know. I don't even know where the people are. Who?
David Newman, by Mechotten.
David Newman is under... I just wrote him a letter of refuah shleima. He has a major operation tomorrow. They did a cataract on him and it moved out of place. Yoma, what was the word he used? What word did he use in his email to me?
Vitreous.
But the cataract slipped out of place and something with the liquid. He has a major operation on Tuesday. Do you remember his name? David Ben. I have it in the office. So that's your Mechutin. David Newman is my dear student, absolutely. Anyway, let's come back here and set the stage. Now, you see, this question, what is Tanya? Is Tanya limited to Chabad? Or is Tanya a volume that belongs to all of Klal Yisrael? All right, this is a fascinating question. As a Talmud of the Rav, I can tell you, I know some parts of Tanya very well, because the Rav would cite it, the Rav would quote it. Now, no one can tell me the Rav was the Lubavitcher Chassid, but some of the concepts in Tanya are way beyond Lubavitch. It's Nachlat HaKlal, if I can use that word. And, I give you a simple example. You talk about Tzadikim, Beinonim, and Rishayim. And everyone knows we're all Beinonim. We all picked that up from the Tanya. More than that, Likutei Torah. You talk about Likutei Torah. So here, in the late 60s, you know, I've published about it, and Menachem Ganak was involved. The Rav wanted to warm up the hearts of the students. He felt, Mindaf Habanam, Mer Varimkeit, more warmth. He wanted to teach Likutei Torah. And you know the story, I trust you know, that Menachem Ganak, the great Rabbi Menachem Ganak, the Tsar of Kashrut, by the way, he's one of the greatest Jews alive for what this man accomplished. You've got to give credit. Kol HaKavod. So he butchered that Likutei Torah, where Litvakin, what a... And the Rav came in, and you know the story, the Rav told it with a Yitzchak Peretz story, I believe, that there was this, the Beit HaLevi had one Talmud who became a Chassidic Rebbe. If I have it right, if not, look into my work on the Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. I have the whole story there as the Rav told it. So if I paraphrase it, you'll look it up and see it word by word. And the Rav says, the Beit HaLevi, Tami, he came a Chassidic Rebbe, and the Beit HaLevi wanted to see what's going on here, a Chassidic Rebbe. And he goes and he visits the Shtibel. And in the middle of a Fabrengen, it's the heart of winter, and the Beit HaLevi looks outside, and the snow is all gone. Trees are blossoming, the birds are chirping, song, beautiful, the Rebbe is speaking, and suddenly the Beit HaLevi looks at his watch, and he sees it's time for Mincha, and they get the clap, Mincha! And at that moment, the trees are covered with snow, no more birds, no more chirping, no more singing. So you see, he said to Ganak, that's you. You ruined it all. I wanted to teach the Likutei Torah, but the farming of the heart. Right, look, Chabad claimed, and I believe here they're correct, Tanya is studied by many Jews. It has nothing to do with Lubavitch. And if young people want to study Tanya, we are here to teach them. All right. Now, here he tells a story. We'll see it next week. We're going to see a prominent Satma who was heads and shoulders above the crowd. And he ultimately, slowly but surely, becomes a Chabadnik. What's very fascinating are the insights and this is sociology, where you have interviews with people, and I've told you more than once that when a person writes a memoir, he can't be wrong. In other words, I'm now writing the history of YU in 1940. I don't know if I'm absolutely right. I'm trying my best, all right? I'm willing to bet I'm 90% right, all right? I'm predicting the past. You follow me, Aaron? Use that expression. I'm predicting the past. I can be right, you know, people can quibble. But when you write a memoir, how you felt, no one can argue, this is the way you felt. I may say you're wrong, but this is the way you felt. We're going to see a lot of terrific insight in Lubavitch vis-a-vis Satmar. And sociologically, it's like Gerson Kranzler's magnificent doctorate, Williamsburg, that I've quoted many times. The most important part of that book are the, I think it's four or five case studies appendix to the book, where it brings the world to life. And here you're going to see some very interesting comments, and they may be right. And it has implications today, the difference between Lubavitch and Satmar, the relationship to the Rebbe, etc. You're going to see a lot of, I would say, unkosher acts with the enmity and hatred, but we got to live with it. Then you'll see the Lubavitch Rebbe's attitude. Okay, there's a lot yet to talk. I'm heading to a crescendo with Lubavitch today, not Lubavitch, Satmar today, but we need time. All right, so now, are there any questions here? Let me reiterate, what did we do today? Okay, we dealt with Satmar becoming a poor, and the, I would say, the intra-Hasidic rivalry, which, and these were two powerhouses. No one else comes on the scene like Satmar and Lubavitch in America. Bavov is big, but Bavov is much milder. It's not as sharp, I would say, not as caustic. Satmar is caustic one way, Lubavitch another way. And maybe the word caustic with Lubavitch is not correct, but active, overwhelming, wow. And it's a fascinating topic. We live it. We'll see further. As I've promised, when it's all finished, I'm going to refute Satmar and anti-Zionism. And I hold my... hold my refutation to be solid, irrevocable, but I don't want to make a fool out of myself. Not everyone will agree with me, but it's food for thought. Even if you disagree, Rakefet has something here, but leave that. And then we move on to God should give strength. And I have to admit, Ani Modala Kadosh Baruch Hu, I had a very bad moment this morning. I hope it's nothing serious, but I was overwhelmed by all the bad news, and suddenly my mind was not, I couldn't focus. And Kanayin Hara, Baruch Hashem. But to grow older, as my mother used to say, you need courage, plain and simple. And again, I recall Billy Hershkowitz was a Shem Dover in the yeshiva. And I'll tell you something else. I'll reveal a secret that shouldn't be revealed for them until 50 years from now. But Billy Hershkowitz worked for the Community Service Division, and in addition to his shtela, which was someplace beyond Riverdale, it was overlooking the Hudson River, more upstate. So when my dear friend Irvin Shapiro, who needs a refuah shleima, we were trying to collect whatever we could, anyone who had tapes of the Rav. And Billy had some tapes from the community service division of talks the Rav gave. And I remember Irwin and his chauffeur driving us out. We see the Hudson River. I thought we were going to fall off the cliff. And we get to Billy's house and we got these reels. They were unbelievably valuable. They were reels from YU Rabbinic alumni where the Rav spoke. And I cite part of them in my work on the Rav. And today they've been put out, they've been republished word by word, translated from the Yiddish, and I recall Billy Herskowitz fondly, and there was something youthful about him. You know, we get together, people who are successful in the world, sometimes they take themselves too seriously. But we were sitting, we were kids having a good time together. Now, you mentioned David Newman. Let him know that Betty Neustadter died. The Neustadters are from Cleveland. I mean, originally New York, where they're from a tremendous family of Shmirat Shabbat. They disprove Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, Dr. Grach, as you call him, Harav HaGaon, Rabbi Dr. Professor, his work, Rupture and Reconstruction. Betty and Harold are from families that's in America 5 generations already, and 90% are from Baruch Hashem. Harold's uncle invented, what do you call that? The Rolodex.
Yeah.
It's his uncle who invented it. Reform guy was on the front page of Time magazine, etc. What families. I spoke with my wife before. She's just overwhelmed because... All right, Ribbono Shel Olam, I need more years. I have more to give. What bothers me, I'm letting down my hair, but hey, what bothers me, it's one thing, you pass on, the new generation takes over. I have some knowledge that no one else has. And if I don't get it out of my system, what will be? What I have prepared on the European yeshivas, the only problem is I need another 20 years. Vic, don't tell them how old I'm going to be in Hanukkah, but make the cheshbon. All right, until we meet again in health and happiness, thank you so much for coming. Yomo, open it to the world. Let's see what. And they're still awake. They've been up all night. When you go back, Aaron, you're not going to have an excuse. There are people looking in from Flatbush.
I'll listen to you a day or two later.
That's the lazy right there. That Rabbi Dr. Mark Licht is looking at me from Flatbush. Mark, are you in Flatbush now? Yeah, he's shaking his head, yes. Someone here from Flatbush live. Baruch Hashem. Okay, is it open to the world?
Should be.
Are there any questions from around the world?
Rabbi, I knew Rabbi Herskowitz. As a young member of the RCA, he was the chairman of the pension committee, so he always encouraged the young Rabbanim to get involved in the pension, and so he supported the, so he's open to speaking with all the Rabbanim about their, taking care of their...
Right. Very important, because Rabbanim are idealistic. I remember it was a great day in YU in the early 60s when Rabbi Belkin introduced pension for all the teachers. You have no idea what a revolutionary step that was. Until then, if someone died, they had to raise charity to support the widow. And this is why Rabbi Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik was very makir tova to Dr. Belkin on that level. If you're familiar with my work on the Rav says that from the day Dr. Belkin took over the yeshiva, all our salaries were paid on time. And he says, and I don't know, he indicates like Peirav Adas, other yeshiva, I'm not certain they're paying on time, but he gave the credit to Dr. Belkin. When Dr. Belkin was on his deathbed, Aaron Adler, Rabbi Dr. Aaron Adler, was driving, you know, he just published this book, Driving the Rebbe Around, and he, what's it for you? He been so haron, is the Hebrew version, in English, what is it called? Conversations while driving.
Conversations with the
Rav, but the driving gets into it some way. So I have to tell you, he writes at the start that he took the Rav to visit Dr. Belkin on Dr. Belkin's deathbed, 1976, Pesach time. This is the Yeshiva's Hospital, Einstein. And the Rav told Aaron Adler, we owe such a debt of gratitude to Rav Shmuel Belkin. If not for him, there would not be a yeshiva today, quote unquote. So that's what the Rav established, the pension. And I have to tell you, I benefited from it until today. I was on the faculty, and until today, I don't, Baruch Hashem, I'm alive and kicking, and I have no expenses today. My kids are all self-supporting, my grandchildren are all self-supporting. So I don't need it, but I have to take, by law, there are all kinds of laws governing the pension plan. But, wow. Okay, very important, Billy Hershkowitz.
Ready?
Yeah.
I just looked it up. It's Conversations in Transit.
Conversations in Transit. I knew there was something in transit there. And Vayehi ben Soa, he has it on the... It's a very fine volume. And if you want to know the totality of the Rav, read that volume and read David Holz's volume, speaking to the Rav also as a Shaifer, etc. And then you get involved with the question, who was the Rav? And I plead with one of my students once again, Aaron, you would be perfect because you have no prejudice. Did you go to YU?
No.
Great.
My grandson.
No, forget about your grandsons now. Can you take off 7 years now? Take Rakafir Aaron, Chelik Dalid, take the picture of the Rav teaching the class 1960. His greatest achievement. Rakafir told me it's his great. It took him years to identify everyone in that picture. Now do your research. What happened to the 29 different people in the class? And then you're going to find out. You're going to describe what they did. A little chapter on each one. You're going to see the leaders of right-wing YU, centrist YU, leftist YU. And then you're going to face a question, who was the Rav? And here, between Holz's book and Aaron Adler's book, you're going to choke. Who was the Rav? But if you do it, Rakefet's going to give you a letter that the Rav wrote. And that letter will solve all your problems. You will have a bestseller, the title of the book, The Class of 1960, Revisited. Gentlemen, I have to...
By the way, Rabbi Hershkowitz was the long-serving Rav in Yonkers.
Right. I knew it was outside of Riverdale. But is it Yonkers he was in, technically? Yonkers,
yeah? It was Yonkers. It was definitely Yonkers.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Just a few months ago, he was able to be Masada Kedusha at his grandson's wedding. But unfortunately, the last month, he was in a decline. But he lived a vital and energetic life until just very recently.
I can just see with his schmeichel, with his smile... what can we say? That is life, and I'll try to combine Shir Shirim and Mishlei Kohelet, but unfortunately the Kohelet part weighs in on us. And did you know Harold Neustadter, Betty Neustadter?
No,
you don't know them. Okay.
No. But we should mention that Rabbi Hershkowitz's wife was a long-serving and dedicated curator of the Yeshiva University Museum.
That's
she
right.
Was a confidant. She was a confidant of Mrs. Jesselson, and she really she put the YU Museum on the map. She was very, very devoted for
Sylvia Hershkowitz.
Sylvia, right.
She should live and be well and find solace in the memory of a great life.
And she's living in Boston now. She's living in Boston.
They're living in Boston?
Yeah, her son-in-law, Nady Case. Nady Davis' brother-in-law is there.
Nady Case.
He was formerly the head of school at Maimonides.
Right, and he's my student. Nady Case is my student. So, Baruch Hashem.
He was in your class the year with Eliezer Cohen.
That's right.
Shmuel Menachem Rabinovich, he was there.
Right. Where is Rabinicki today?
Shmuel Menachem, you wouldn't recognize me as a
I know that.
He's a Rebbe serving in Queens. I forget the name of the yeshiva. Dr. Lamb offered him a position as a Rav.
I'm well aware of it, and he had to sign a pledge that he wouldn't criticize the yeshiva because of Khan. Had he asked me, I would have told him, Shmuel, sign the pledge and do what you want. No one is going to remember or call you to order. But you say so. Don't bite the hand that feeds you. But
as a youngster, we recognized he was an Eloi. He had remarkable intellect.
Right, but he had a very brilliant father, an Israeli, and Kanain Hara. Do me a favor, if you're in touch with any of these, Eliezer Cohen lives here.
Right,
and he's a plumber. What does he do? He's an installateur.
Yeah. Yeah, well, now I think he's a proud Zadie of
me. No. So he's the one who told me the story. I have to end off with this because the class is coming in. But Yomo, why can't my faith show? Why is it all they see is me sideways? Is there a way to work out the camera?
The camera's here and you're turned that way.
So do me a favor. Can you work out the camera that it... Let's see.
Yes, but the microphone is going to be in the way.
Here I am. Oh, now I see myself. Hi. Eliezer tells me he has a master's and he goes to Aliyah and he's an instructor, he's a plumber, and his father is all upset. Is this what I raised you for and sent you to school and you're intelligent? What kind of profession? And he says to his father, Avodah Ivrit. This is what Israel's about. And I say, if I could meet his father, I would say to him, your husband has seichel. I was a Rebbe, I'm a Lamed. In the 70s, I didn't have money for food for the fourth Shabbos of the month. And it wasn't that I was lazy. I had two full jobs. But they were on the books. The whole economy here was black. And I'm getting paid... Jewish agency in State of Israel. Go and hide it. You can't. Your son makes a living. You know what an achievement that is? The common aliyah.
He was very highly respected as a tradesman. And you know his father came through Shanghai from Mir.
Right.
His principal for the roads.
Yitzchak, Rabbi Rubin often speaks about him. And this is my vote, that the Shanghai crowd diffused all over America L'Kavod the L'Tiferet. And the Rav, Boston, Maimonides, Rakefet, Salanter, Rav Henoch Fishman, you can go one by one. What miracles. And this is what I said an hour and 40 minutes ago. Give the youth pride. What we have accomplished, Baruch Hashem, a lot more to do, but join us. Keep with us. Strengthen us. Torah is eternal. We are the eternal people. Am Yisrael Chai. Okay, I want to thank everyone. It was a very moving morning for me, and it ended off on a very high, beautiful note. And halavai hala. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya.